This morning we were talking about 1 Thessalonians 5:18. In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. And I said the reason that's commanded is that God knows that we need to be that way. And I fervently believe that. This can turn so many things around for us. Lots of times I'll be driving on a freeway with a 70-mile-an-hour speed limit, and there'll be two vehicles in front of me going side by side, 45 miles an hour. And I need to be someplace, and I hate to be late. You know, no matter how good your excuse is, if you're late, you're still late, and I hate that. So 45 miles an hour, and I'm going from one lane to the other. Is anybody going to move? And when I get in that situation, I'm in the process of training myself to start counting my blessings. Just fall back a little bit and practice what song number 68 in the Red Book says. Count your blessings. And it's amazing the difference in attitude that has made for me. Start thinking of things to be thankful for. Thankful for everything that has gone well today. Thankful I haven't wrecked my car so far. I mean, it's really been beneficial for me just to try to make that adjustment in my thinking. But I was trying to give you illustrations of in everything give thanks and why that's good for us and how that works. I was going to use a personal example. I don't really like to use it, and I definitely don't want to be maudlin about it. But the worst thing that ever happened to Lynn and me was when our younger son Clint was killed in a car wreck 9 years ago. And if I can be thankful for something in that, then I'm learning how to be thankful. And we found that there are things that we can be thankful for. I sent him out to get some welding done, and I watched him drive away and never saw him alive again. But even in this, we found things to be thankful for. For example, we're grateful that if it was going to happen at all, that he was killed instantly rather than being a vegetable or being in agony in a hospital somewhere. I mean, that's 9 years ago. We could still be visiting him every day in a hospital, and he would be in agony and hate his circumstances. So there are worse things than death if you're a Christian. We can be grateful that he was instantly killed. We're grateful that he didn't have to suffer. And we're thankful that nobody else was hurt. I met with the man who ran into him. At first he was afraid to meet with me because he didn't know what I was going to do to him. We had an appointment made already. He was supposed to come to our house. And somebody told him, oh, don't meet with that man. He may kill you. You killed his son. He may kill you. So he didn't show up, and we had to make another appointment. I met him in a public place so everybody could see what was going on. I offered to take him out to dinner because I wanted to hear the details to the extent possible. Anyway, he just had one little bruise below his knee. That's all. So we can be grateful that nobody else was hurt. We're thankful that Clint was a good boy. He didn't know he was leaving, but we didn't find anything in his room or in his car or on his computer that would have compromised him in any way. He loved the Lord and the church, and he was so conscientious and so concerned about people. In fact, I told Lynn shortly before he died that if he keeps on like he is, I know he's going to get discouraged, and when that happens, I hope I can be there for him. But instead of that happening, he went out on a high note at 19, and he never had to face so many things that come along later in life. We're thankful for that. Now, this doesn't mean that we're glad he died. Of course we wish he hadn't died. It doesn't mean we don't miss him. Of course we miss him, not only every day, but 100 times a day. But we're grateful that things weren't any worse, and we hope to see him again, and we thank God for that Christian hope. This is what I believe the Apostle Paul means when he says, in everything give thanks. No matter how horrible it is, no matter how much you wish it wasn't that way, find something about it, preferably find a dozen things about it, that you can be thankful for, and your life's going to be better. This is for you. This is the reason God built this into his word, because he knows that we need to be this way. It doesn't change anything except that it changes you. And when it changes you, then it changes what you see in the world around you. Gratitude unlocks the fullness of life. Gratitude turns what we have into enough and more than enough. I know people, even rich people, I mean relatively wealthy people, who are always concerned that they want more. That's what they said, one of the Rockefellers said. One of the Rockefellers was asked one time, how much money is enough? He said, just a little more, just a little more. And you get to the place where you're fulfilling what the wisdom writer said back in the Old Testament. Gold is not satisfied with gold, neither silver with silver. You're always wanting more. You get into that mindset. But gratitude turns what we have into enough. Gratitude turns denial into acceptance. Gratitude turns chaos into order. Gratitude turns confusion into clarity. Let gratitude be the pillow on which you kneel to say your nightly prayer. It's good for you to do that. The Lord taught us to pray, deliver us from evil. That's in the Sermon on the Mount. You're well familiar with Matthew 6:13. Deliver us from evil. I've tried to figure out what is he talking about there. And I've decided that when the Lord fulfills that request, we probably don't usually know it because we don't know what we were delivered from. So we thank God for the care that did not come to try us. We can thank God for the burden we did not have to bear. We can thank God for the trouble that passed us by. You know, everywhere I am, no matter where I am, my wife prays for me every night. Who knows how many perils I've been delivered from just because of her nightly prayers for me. We can be thankful for the hurt we did not have to endure. We can be thankful for the task we did not fail to do, for the friend who did not prove untrue, and for the joy that did not perish. If we only knew God's methods, if we only knew all of the unknown evils from which he delivers us day by day, with what sincere and heartfelt thanksgiving we would come to the throne of grace. But it's only going to be when life is over and we stand up to meet our Maker that we may know then some of the dangers and the foes from which he's been delivering us all through the years. For that all-wise protection, we should begin and end every day with grateful thanks. The real art of thanksgiving is thanksgiving. Thanksgiving's not just a day on the calendar. Thanksgiving is a lifestyle. It's thanking God for your talents by considering them to be obligations to be invested for good. It's thanking God for all that others have done for you by doing for others. It's thanking God for your opportunities by accepting them as challenges for achievement. It's thanking God for happiness by trying to make other people happy. It's thanking God for beauty by trying to make the world more beautiful. It's thanking God for inspiration by being an inspiration. It's thanking God for each new day by living it in triumphant faith. It's adding to your prayers of thanksgiving acts of thanks living. And with all that God does for us and has done for us, with all his promises for the future, how little he asks in return, how little he really asks of us. Somebody wrote a little poem about this. What do you owe God, you ask? Suppose he sent his bill. $100,000 for the sun upon the hill. $2,000 for the little brook that runs along the way. $500 for the nighttime, $1,000 for the day. $600 for the little birds that chirp and trill and sing. $600 for the tiny flowers that tell us when it's spring. These are bills that everyone of every clime forget. If God should charge you what you owe, you'd never pay the debt. One of the saddest things that I've read in recent years, and I'm going to conclude with this and then throw it open for any questions or comments that you might have. But one of the saddest things I've read in the last few years was written by an agnostic. His name is Bart Ehrman. I don't know if I've ever told you about Bart Ehrman before or not. His story interests me. Anyway, this young man, his name is Bart Ehrman. When he was in high school in Lawrence, Kansas, he had the same kind of a religious experience that lots of our evangelical type friends have. He was raised in that kind of a family. And he believed that he had met the Lord Jesus Christ in this experience and became a born-again Christian, as the phrase is commonly used, and was very adamant in his faith for some several years. Went through the University of Kansas this way. But then he went to seminary. I think he went up to Wheaton first, and his faith was continued then in school at Wheaton, Illinois, which is an evangelical college, as you probably know. But then he went, I believe, to Princeton Theological Seminary. I usually call the seminaries cemeteries because so much faith is buried there. And sure enough, that's what happened to him. He changed from an evangelical Christian into one who does not believe the Bible is the Word of God, although he still thinks it's important on some kind of level, but just exactly what he thinks about it, I'm not sure that even he himself knows. Anyway, the point about this young man is that he's written several best-selling books. You probably are familiar with some of them, but they're all basically the same. You know how it is. You write a book and a lot of people buy it, so you write another book along the same lines, hoping that a lot of people will buy it. And he's written probably at least a half a dozen of these, showing how the Bible is not really from God, that it was put together by a piecemeal method, and there's no way we can tell what it really originally said. And the people who we think wrote the books of the Bible didn't really write them. Along those lines, in those veins. Very popular book. I was talking with a girl not long ago that it was suggested to her that she read one of these books, and I bought a copy of it just because I knew she was reading it, and I wanted to keep up with her because she's a fine Christian girl, and I want to help her to stay that way. Anyway, I was reading Bart Ehrman's book on suffering. This came out a few years ago, I think. And the reason it intrigued me so much is because of what he said about himself using a personal example. Here's what he said, quote, "The problem is this. I have such a fantastic life that I feel an overwhelming sense of gratitude for it. I am fortunate beyond words, but I don't have anyone to express my gratitude to. This is a void deep inside me, a void of wanting someone to thank, and I don't see any plausible way of filling it." End quote. Somehow, I find that just incredibly sad. By ignoring the existence of God, he is denying himself the opportunity to be a fulfilled human being. Because we need to thank not only each other, we need to thank God. And he doesn't believe that God is really there to hear his thanks. So I just thought that was one of the saddest things I've read for a long time. But it's the place a lot of people wind up when you don't believe in the one true and living God who really is there, who created us, who knows what we need, and who has provided for everything we need. Okay, that's this morning's lesson. What I said this morning plus this, that's the lesson that I had planned to give you all this morning, and now you can see, since it's taken 20 minutes for this last part of it, I can see that you're very glad I didn't try to cram it all in by shoehorn this morning. Anyway, anybody have any questions, comments, or thoughts on the whole area of gratitude and thanksgiving? Paul.
I see very little gratitude nowadays, especially if when you're out around people that aren't Christian, and I'm not sure people even understand what that is anymore. I see more of it in the church than I do anywhere. But boy, when you go somewhere, you just wonder how people get through the day with the attitudes that they have about their situation and everybody else. And I think it all boils down to people are, see so many people that are just selfish, self-absorbed. And that is the root of lots of problems.
It certainly is. Absolutely. And one of the things the Lord has done for us in the church is to get us out of ourselves. That's why I advocate when the leadership of a congregation sets certain meetings. Hopefully they do this with the congregation in mind and even with the input of the congregation. But somehow every congregation decides when it's going to meet. And in your case, and in most cases, they decide to meet three times a week. Once that's been decided, then If possible, we ought to really put ourselves out to be at all those meetings or as many of them as we possibly can. One reason is it gets us out of ourselves. A lot of us have a tendency to try to keep our world as small as possible and focused on ourselves. But if you're attending with the saints, you're going to hear about somebody else's problems for a change. So it gets you out of yourself, and surely this is one of the things the Lord had in mind when he set up the church as he did. And often I've told people, you know, it's not going to hurt, whatever the ailment is, it's not going to hurt any worse at church than it will at home. And if you get to church, you may actually forget about your problem for a while, because you'll be thinking about something else or somebody else. And how many times have you not really wanted to go to church, but you went ahead and went, and then by the time it was over, you were glad you went, because it was an uplifting experience. It's all in the wisdom of God that this is set up. Is it you, Cindy?
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say kind of the same thing, that that attitude overcomes so many things, you know, depression and worry and so many sins, you know, overcome jealousy and envy and anger. And, you know, if you're thinking about, you know, what you've got to be thankful for and how blessed you are, it's hard to be jealous or envious or be angry, you know, so that attitude really helps overcome those things.
Absolutely. Good comment. Yes, you know, a lot of us when we were kids, going back to Paul's comment too, we were just taught to say please and thank you, and I didn't really know why I was being taught. I was told it was polite, and I believed that, and I do believe it. It is a polite thing, but it's something about attitude too. It's deeper than just the words. It shows a consideration for the other person, just to say please and thank you. And I think a lot of people aren't being taught to say those words. And the problem is not the words. They're not getting the attitude that goes along with the words. And Cindy's right. And it goes back to the idea of attending the assemblies of the saints. Every time we attend the assembly, I think of this as a reset button. We might get out in the world and we start to take on the attitudes of the people that were around or the people we're seeing, a little jealousy and envy there, a little anger over here. But when we get together, at least we draw each other's attention to what God's standard is. Most people don't have that. And so they get to this point of badness one day, and then there's no reset. They don't go back over here. So they go further on, and that's how we wind up with some of the most amazing perversities that you can imagine in humanity, because there's no reset. You never go back to ground zero. You just keep on going further, further into your own self-absorption. So I appreciate that comment very much. There is getting to be, as I view it at least, there's getting to be more and more of a glaring disparity between the people in the world and the people in the church. Difference. When I was growing up as a kid, it seemed like there was almost a homogeneity, at least as I viewed it, whether somebody was in the world or in the church. There were a lot of similarities because we had that so-called Christian consensus. But now, it's pretty glaring, the difference between somebody who believes in the Lord Jesus Christ and somebody who does not. It's getting so you can tell pretty quickly anymore whether they have that confidence. I appreciate that very much. Sherry.
When I was taking notes, I put down, be thankful for the great examples. And I think we can consider the body, different people and different lives we've had as great examples, and the Bible itself for giving us great examples and solutions to problems.
Right. That's an excellent comment. We have so many wonderful Bible examples, and a lot of them are in the Old Testament. It's bigger. I was just talking with somebody yesterday who had seen a situation where the Old Testament was not emphasized at all. They never said don't read it, but it was like you don't really need to read it because we don't go by that now. And it was just total New Testament. Well, how much you'd miss out on? And a lot of what you'd miss out on are those historical examples of those biblical characters, both the things they did right and the things they did wrong and the consequences they bore because of what they did wrong. we would hate to live without those biblical examples. And then the examples in our own lives as well. Just a few months ago, as I said at Daryl's funeral, we had a changing of the guard. We had the end of an era because Daryl was the last charter member of this congregation. Just this morning, I was looking at these scallops up here and remembering the day that he took that coffee can and made the pattern on the other side of that piece of wood and cut that out. It seemed like a small thing back then, but it's been there now for 60 years. And, you know, it's just one of the marks of one of our mentors. And we had a lot of good mentors. You and I hit this congregation at a very good time. And it's made an impact on our lives that will last as long as we last. So, yes, we'll always think back to those old people. Tom.
Yes, I have a little story to tell.
Good.
Here. Do you thank God for the gratitude that he's done for us? How does he remind you of something like that if you haven't done it? Well, as everybody knows, about 13 months ago, I had a tragic accident.
I was thinking of that a minute ago.
Well, this is a story. And I've gotten to where I don't think of it much anymore. But yesterday, something happened that really made me have to think about it and thank God for the gratitude he's given us. Because in Texas yesterday, a 19-year-old man and a 20-year-old woman, they had a wedding. They went to the Justice of the Peace with their parents, and they got married. Well, when they were pulling out of the parking lot and got hit by a truck, and they both got killed instantly.
Wow.
Just got married. The Justice of the Peace that just signed their wedding certificate had to go out and sign the death certificate.
Amazing.
And that really brought me back to reality and to thank him that he saved my family and me. Just thanking him for that.
Yeah. What a tragedy. And yet, even in that, and I say in the context of, I had a wedding yesterday up in North Missouri. A young couple that's just so in love with each other and so eagerly anticipating the future. And I was thinking of them as you were telling your story. And I'm thinking, well, if it happened, at least they both died.
Yeah.
I mean, how awful it would be if one died and the other didn't. At least they both went at the same time. And I could wish that for Lynn and I, that we both die at the same time. But it's hard to arrange. I mean, you can't. You know, it's just, it's going to be how it's going to be. But it would be nice to die at the same time as your spouse, I think, because it just overcomes so the need for so much grief. Donna's been gone a year, for example, and I think of Paul all the time, but I don't really know what he's going through, and I don't want to live that. I don't know. Fortunately, I think I'm going to die before Lynn does. Women do better than the men, generally. But it would be nice to die together. The minute you told that story, I was just grateful that at least they were both killed.
Yeah.
Because it could have been worse in that way. Thank you for that story. That's amazing. I had not heard about that. Other questions, comments, or thoughts on either the talk or the comments that have been made? Jane.
Well, I'm thankful being in the place that I'm in right now, most of all for my Christian family and the guy sitting next to me, because he is a great example and gains my gratitude all the time. And the same with Bill. He has been very kind and helpful to me. And Carol sitting back there, thinks that she fails to send me cards when she wants to, but when I go through the cards that I have, that every once in a while I'll go through some of them, and I find more from Carol than anybody, and they're always very inspiring, and I just think that it's great to have such a nice Christian family.
It is, and not every congregation is like this one, I can tell you that. But we're blessed with such valuable and quality people. Carol used to be my bus driver when I went to school. I don't know if you knew that, but she's always been just like she is now. We treasure her. And this congregation has always been blessed from the very first time the first elders were appointed. We've always been blessed with a more than average benevolent eldership. They're good, strong, scriptural men, and they're also benevolent and kind. And it's hard to quantify the exact mix, but it always has been that way in this congregation, and it's been one reason for the success of the congregation, the leadership. I thank you very much for those comments. There was some, Ed.
You mentioned this verse this morning. It's in Romans 1.
Yeah.
Although they knew God, and that could be us.
Right.
We know God.
Right.
They did not honor him as God or give thanks to him. And what that resulted in was futile thinking,
right,
and a foolish heart,
right,
that was darkened.
Right.
So one of the biggest changes in my life that started getting me into a better place was realizing my blessings. I was one who just had a half a glass of water
Yeah.
I was short in here, short in there. This was tough, and somebody had it better. But when I started looking at what the things that I had, those foolish, dark thoughts went away, and they were replaced with thankfulness. And then I was able to honor.
Yeah. That's tremendous. It makes a difference. And it's made a visible difference in your life. I appreciate the change. You've really showed us a lot. Appreciate it very much. Okay, anybody else have a question, comment, or thought? Barbara does.
Count your blessings, you'll be glad. Count your troubles, you'll be sad. It's a very good little rhyme to remember.
I like that. Yes, Rhema Robinson used to have a little ditty that was similar to that. She said, look around, be distressed. Look within, be depressed. And there was one more line that was the good thing. I don't remember the good thing. What did she say? Have you ever heard her say that? She said that in her home. Look around, be distressed. Look within, be depressed. Look to God and be blessed. I'm not sure quite what she said, but I know that's two-thirds right at least. They all rhymed, I remember that. She'd been gone a long time. Anyway, it's the same basic idea that attitude is such an important thing. When we boil it all down, there are a few things more important than our attitude. And thanksgiving is just one aspect of it. But if we can get the thanksgiving right, if we can get in the habit of being thankful, then we're on the best side of this, because habit tends to rule our lives. How many things do you do habitually? Each one of you, when you get home today, it's automatic when you first get home. You go into that. Generally, you go into the house the same way. Maybe you if you still have a house phone, maybe you check the answering machine. You put your keys in the same place or your fob. You do the same things for quite a little while there right after you get home. Wash your hands, I hope. All those things, it's just automatic because it's habit. Do you remember brushing your teeth this morning? Maybe you do and maybe you don't, but you probably did because it's habit. So if we develop the right habits, that's huge. People say, well, you just go to church three times a week because it's habit. Well, what if it is habit? I'd rather have a good habit than a bad habit. If you do something habitually, that's not always bad. Doesn't mean it's wrong or minimized because it's a habit. And if we have the habit of thinking in terms of what can I find in this to be grateful for, I think we're way ahead. Because everybody has problems, whether they have a way of coping with them or not. But we have ways of coping with them provided by the Lord himself if we just follow his word. He says, in everything give thanks. Take it literally and give thanks in everything that happens. You can always find something to be grateful for. You guys have done a great job this afternoon. I think it's been very, very edifying. I know it has been for me, and I think it has been for everyone. Appreciate you being here throughout the day. If there's nothing further, we'll conclude with an invitation again, never knowing the hearts of those present, and we'll extend that as we stand together and sing.